Hello, everybody. Happy Friday. It's Shag and Flies. I am coming to you live, or not live, really, from Chicago, Illinois. I don't know where you are, but you're probably not as far away as our guest, Alex Chamberlain, who joined me and Ben live from Hawaii this week, which is where he resides with his family. We only got a little bit less than an hour and a half with Alex, which is pretty short by our standards, but we covered a lot of ground as per usual. Alex is one of the biggest names and faces in baseball data modeling, who somehow doesn't yet work for an MLB team, so he talked to us a bit about how that came about. Super interesting stuff. We learned he is a big fan of bullpen carts. Maybe unless you're a closer, so, you know, you get your walk-up music and everything. He grew up an Angels fan, so we took the opportunity to remember some guys, because for some reason the Angels franchise is great for that. The order of operations trifecta resulted in yet another highly disturbing discovery, but I will wait and let y'all find out what that is, and that is just scratching the surface. So, without any more stalling, here is episode 30... Christ, I can't believe we're at 30, of Shag and Flies with Alex Chamberlain.
If I start answering the question like, without the question in the cut,
oh my god,
then you're just like, what's going
on? leave it up to the listeners to figure out whatever you're talking about.
Well, you probably don't have. Well, okay, so it happened on a floor.
That's super uncomfortable.
What's he talking about?
Now I kind of I'm not going to get into it because now I'm curious. But anyways, I won't do it. Don't worry. I don't want you to have to edit all around that. I'm not that cruel. So anyways, Alex, what's up? How you doing? I'm happy you're here, man. It's good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm okay. I'm okay.
Doing good?
You can see that it's still daylight here where I live.
Where are you?
I'm in Hawaii. I'm the resident Hawaii guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How long have you been in Hawaii?
Five and a half years. Been here for 5.5 years. My wife's Hawaiian. My wife's from Hawaii. So
nice.
So that's how that happens, is you marry a Hawaiian person and then you get to go to Hawaii.
And then you end up That's really the reason why you marry a Hawaiian person.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah. There's no other redeeming qualities.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all.
Is it tough being like 6 hours behind everybody though?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it actually is. Well, currently 5. We don't do daylight savings, but so it will be 6 whenever that happens. When is that? It's going to be in like March, right? It's going to be really soon.
In the it's really
like
soon.
Second week of March.
It is,
and I feel bad because I'm in a couple of slow drafts right now. I'm in 4-hour slow drafts in, and I wake up usually just very groggy at like 7 a.m. and I typically only have 1 hour left on the clock every single time.
Oh man.
And so I'm always like apologizing, like, and the thing is I'm apologizing for being in Hawaii, so I have to do that. I'm like, I'm sorry.
Oh god, I'm so sorry. I'm in
like,
paradise.
Just waking up, and they're like, "Where are you?" And I'm like, I'm in Hawaii. I understand how that sounds. I'm sorry. I'm apologizing for apologizing now. But anyway, just I apologize for being so slow on the clock because I'm like, you know, I'm way behind. I also just routinely miss lineup setups. Forget that there's like a 10 a.m. game on the West Coast, or I'm sorry, it's like a 1 o'clock game East Coast, so it'll be like a 7 o'clock game here, and I'll wake up and I'll have my coffee and I'll look at my lineup. I'm like, oh, it's locked. Okay, sweet. So that happens. That happens a lot. There actually is kind of some downsides, but I love all the games being done before midnight. Mm. They're done by like 10. I like in football season waking up and having coffee and watching football. That's
cool.
Fun. You know, you just plop down on the couch at like 8:15 or whatever, and you just like, you know, watch football and drink coffee. No one else gets to do that. So, you know, there's pluses and minuses.
That's cool. Which island are you on?
I'm on Oahu right now. We were on Maui for a little bit, and now we're back on Oahu.
That's awesome. Do you do any of like the water sports stuff, surfing or anything like that?
No, I do not. I consider myself an athlete, but I have poor balance. I have poor this way balance. Like I can, you know, I'm plenty athletic side to side. It's like baseball balance. You know, I'm good side to side, but you put me on a snowboard or a surfboard or a skateboard and all bets are off. So, I'm also just a really bad swimmer. I'm not very confident in my swimming. So
it's a good thing you're on an island.
I know. So, just quintessentially not fit for.
I'm sure swimming is not gonna matter much while you're on.
Global
warming, Ben. You heard of it?
Yeah.
We made sure that we're so far above sea level that when it happens, I won't have to swim to safety. That's been our number one priority, is making sure that I don't have to swim to safety at any point.
Right. Which, as it should be.
Yeah.
So, being that you've only been in Hawaii for 5 years, obviously you are not originally from Hawaii. So, what I want to know is the Alex origin story. Where are you from originally? How did you get to where you are now? You're, you know, writing about fantasy baseball and all of that. I'm also curious, and you know, answer this in whatever order you want. I know you do a whole lot of data modeling. You are definitely one of the more math heavy, math intuitive people that I know in the fantasy community, which is awesome. It's something that I envy the people who are so like math intuitive. So I'm also curious, when you got into fantasy baseball writing, was the data modeling something that you were kind of into beforehand, and then it was like a skill that sort of just applied to fantasy baseball? Or was it you got into fantasy baseball writing and you're like, you know what, I need to get into data modeling too? Like, what? How did that come about?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm from Southern California originally. I'm actually not a Dodgers fan. And actually, I'm wearing not a Dodgers shirt, but a Puig Destroyer shirt.
Oh, nice.
Puig Destroyer.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, so this is 666. I can't turn the right way. 666. Anyway, so I'm not a Dodger fan. Although I don't have anything as a Dodger. I mean, I'm a disgruntled Angels fan. You know, very jaded.
Is there such a thing as an optimistic Angels fan at this point? Is there one who's like,
yeah, at this point, yeah. It's genuinely devastating. And you know, you can't complain, because you get to watch two of the best players on the planet. And at the same time, it's devastating to just watch it be so inept. It's really impressive, actually. Like, if you can step back and appreciate how bad it is and detach yourself from the fandom, you're like, wow, that actually is like really incredible that you can take two of the best players in the world.
Two of the best players.
And
maybe,
you just fuck it up spectacularly. Yeah. Yeah,
which is wild.
To have two players who are like making history every game, and then you lose.
Yeah. And there's that tweet that's like, it's a really good tweet too. It's like something about like Mike Trout setting a record. Shohei Ohtani did something for the first time since three-toed so and so from the 1921 Akron groomsmen, and the Angels lost 8-3. And
yeah, like, that's exactly.
Evergreen. It's such
a,
evergreen.
It's so tone perfect. It's got to be. It's a Hall of Fame. It's an easily a Hall of Fame.
It's crazy because the Angels were such a paragon of consistency most of the 2000s into the early 2010s too. Like, I mean,
that,
some of those lineups.
Mid-90s to early 2000s. Yeah.
I mean, there was a year I remember. I want to say it was like 2008, 2009, when everyone in the lineup, like top to bottom, the nine starters were all, if not over 300.
That was the first time that it ever happened. Yeah, I remember that. It was, it was during
Eric
the heyday.
Ibar, you know, and
right. Yeah, right. It's just like a scrappy guys, you know, just like, but like the classic Angels, right? Ibar. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely remembering some guys like Gary DeSarcina and like Tim Salmon, Garrett Anderson.
Oh, man.
Garen Erstad. There's one of my favorites growing up.
Jim Edmonds was gone. Troy Percival.
Troy Percival.
Benji Molina.
Yep. For the next hour, we're just going to start
remembering Angels from the 90s and 2000s. Anyway, I So I was born in California. I'm from Orange County. And then I've always been a math guy. Like, I've always, I nickname at some point was the human calculator. Nice. You know, I was always the best and fastest at math in every class I was ever in. It's just kind of always been my thing. I'm now actually very slow at math because I'm so heavily reliant on technology, and also I don't do it as much anymore. I let Excel do it.
What our math teachers told us would happen actually.
Oh, absolutely. My brain is just decaying.
You're not gonna remember math. And I use my calculator all the time.
True. I do feel just mentally like I feel like I am in some kind of like mental degradation phase, though. Just like you gotta practice those things because they will fade. I thought I was going to be invincible and just know math forever, but I do not. I hardly know math now. Anyway, I was always really good at math. Found out kind of in high school that I was good at writing too, and didn't really know what I wanted to do. Ended up majoring in college, double majoring in journalism and economics. So that was always kind of like pairing those two items together of writing and math savvy stuff. I ended up getting a master's in economics, which is really just like a poor man's statistics. So I'm like, I'm like okay at economics and also very okay at statistics. And that's just enough to get me employed somewhere. But it's really good for fantasy baseball. And I didn't know what I was doing at the time. Where is this story going? It was my second year of grad school. And FanGraphs just posted like, hey, we have job openings. It was like the first time they had job openings in years and years and years. It was probably like they've only had like two big hiring waves in the last probably 7 years or so. So I applied. I didn't get hired. This was like a salaried, like standard FanGraphs gig, like not RotoGraphs, so not the fantasy side. But I didn't get hired, but they were like, but this sounds like fantasy stuff that you want to do. You should just, we'll send you to Eno and Eno Saris and Eno, we'll let us know, or we'll let you know, if he's interested. And he was, and he took me on board, and that's kind of just how it's been ever since. So I like learned the modeling stuff in school. Again, poor man statistician, so I didn't learn it particularly well. My background isn't super strong. It's mostly just well practiced. There's still a lot of stuff that I could know or be better at. And, you know, I'm busy sitting here on Twitter these days watching these like 19-year-old kids in stats classes with all the savant data, and they're like talking about, I don't know what they're talking about. So, there's definitely like, it's very humbling. And like, I think people look up to me as someone who, is very math savvy, and I am, but there's also, there's always going to be people who are better. So I'm very appreciative of the respect and the recognition that I get, but I'm also like, guys, I just like, I'm faking it just as well as anyone else in here. You know, we're all doing our best. But anyway, that's a long answer to a short question. It was never planned, but the math came before the fantasy baseball stuff. It just kind of preceded it nicely.
That makes a lot of sense. I can see how just if you're good at math, you could be drawn to fantasy sports in general, just because they're that I think being good at math definitely gives you a leg up, because if you're smart with statistics and stuff, especially in fantasy baseball, like that all automatically just gives you a slight advantage, I think. If you know how to apply it.
I think there's kind of there's like the gambling instinct element to it too. It's kind of like if anyone's a real savant, pun not intended, with math, it's not me, but I'm sure everyone's gotten the, have you ever tried counting cards, type thing? I think everyone's always, there's, for those of us who are not particularly numerically gifted, I think there's always kind of a, like, almost, mystical element to it. Like, can't you just like unlock the secrets to winning everything by quantifying it, right? That's what
you're touching on a lot of things here. I I think I became very interested in math because of baseball, because of statistics. I mean, baseball statistics, you know, metrics, I should say, maybe is the correct word for that. And this is the early 90s, mid 90s or whatever, when I'm, you know, collecting baseball cards with my dad is also, you know, watching baseball all the time. He played softball twice a week. He was always, you know, he always kept stats. He did the books, he did the score books, but he also every single season kept stats for everyone. And I think that was just like his kind of like very remarkable, but strange kind of obsession with doing this, which I think is just like, to me is normal. Like, I'm like, I always want to keep track of things. I want to know how good or bad people are on my team, or, you know, whatever. Like, if you're coaching a softball team or managing a softball team, you want to know who you should bat eighth or second or whatever. Like, it makes total sense that he would want to do it. It makes sense to us. It doesn't make sense to my wife, you know, that he would want to do that. And so, like, from the start, like, being exposed to, literally like Microsoft Excel from an early age, but also just the idea of tracking metrics, understanding what these mean, watching my dad do this religiously, trying to understand like what the numbers on the backs of the cards mean, understanding why they're good or bad. And this is back in the day with batting average and home runs. Like, it's not very,
right,
you know, advanced, but just kind of like nurturing that curiosity from a very young age, and also just loving to play baseball. So like just having the intuition for it, also kind of cultivated from a really young age. So having that, like, that interest in the sport, but mostly, I mean, very specifically in the numbers part of it, and that very specific interest kind of cultivating my love for math. Like, that's kind of really where the genesis of it is. And obviously there's a natural talent kind of thing to it too, because you can't just like baseball and then suddenly be good at numbers. Right. But, you know, it was just kind of like, it was a happy marriage of the two from a really young age. And so it's always been in the forefront. And my dad has been playing fantasy baseball since 87 or 88. So I've always known from that young age too, that he had fantasy baseball teams, and I always wanted to play. I didn't understand that I didn't have to be in his league. Like, no one told me that, like, you could make a league with someone else. I was like, this is just the one league that exists. One day I'll be invited into the league. Then I'm just going to ask my dad all the time about his league. So basically, like, finally he invited me to the league when I was like 20 or 21 or whatever. But my whole childhood, like, being genuinely very interested in his fantasy baseball team and wondering how it was doing, kind of in tandem with liking baseball numbers and statistics and stuff. So it's just a nice, like, boiling pot of very specific baseball interests from a very young age that definitely, like, led up to all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny hearing you talk about, your dad keeping stats for his, softball team. Just to relate, I grew up with my dad. He doesn't do it anymore, but he used to keep score at, we would go to Orioles games all the time, and he would keep score. He would get the program and he'd teach me how to keep score. And I really kind of fell in love with that. And then I was, when he was coaching my little brother in Little League, I was the team scorekeeper. And then I started keeping an Excel sheet of stats for literally my brother's, like, 9-year-old Little League team.
There you go.
And giving my dad stats. And he would, I don't know if he actually used them, but he was like, oh, thanks, this helps me figure out my lineup or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I definitely get that. So I'm curious.
Do you keep score when you go to games?
I don't. I don't have any interest. No, I'd rather just. I like watching. I am very much like a casual baseball fan when I'm at a game, and I'm like more than happy to, like, if my wife is going, she's curious about food and drinks and, like, who's the mascot and, like, when do the kids come out in the field in the third inning to do, like, games and stuff. And I'll humor her on all those things. We're more than happy to walk around the stadium and not actually watch anything that's going on. I'm very much, like, not there. to watch the game. I will pay attention, obviously, but it's really, I'm not like that other Hall of Fame tweet where he tells his kid to shut the F up. I'm calculating win probability. You remember that one too? That's also a Hall of Fame tweet. That's not me at a game. I'm actually very much the opposite. So no, I don't do any books. Don't do the books at the games.
Yeah.
I think one day when I'm old though, maybe I will.
Yeah.
I'd like to become that guy.
I try, because I was taught to keep score, and this is something that I've heard from other like people who just kind of fall in love with stats for some reason or another. That's what happened to me. I don't know why, because I don't like math all that much. I was a history and lit major. I write. that's what I do. But I was taught to keep score when I was 7, you know, by an old friend of my dad's, and I still go to a lot of games and I still keep score every time I can. And I've thought to myself many times over the past couple of years, especially as I've gone to more and more games, like, why am I doing this? Like, what am I gaining by this? It's not even like I'm in the press box and it's, you know, actually helping me keep track of stuff. It's just, I don't know. It's something that you do. And I find it enjoyable, but I think you kind of get
a souvenir is the way I kind of look at it.
Yeah.
It's like a souvenir of like, here's exactly how the game went.
Right. And it's a narrative. It's just not the written word, but you can read it and be like, that was when he hit the game-winning home run in the ninth inning.
Right.
Look at it, and maybe you can even visualize that hit, you know, by just reading the box score, or not box score, but the, you know, your scorebook. So I've heard that people say that too. So
yeah.
This is off my wall because the frame broke recently, but this is a scorecard from Mark Burley's perfect game in 2000.
I was literally about to ask if you kept score when you went.
It's one of my favorite games of all time.
It's, oh my God, incredible game. But that's like, I think to myself, like, that's why you do it. Yes. Because then, you know, something like happens, you have that. And then I think to myself, I've already seen a perfect game. What the hell do I need another scorecard for?
Well, it's
one of those little oddities and quirks about baseball though, that I think makes it great. Cause you can experience the game so many different ways, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I am curious, before we get to baseball, I do want to ask, well, I guess we've already been talking about baseball a little bit. Before we get to the more baseball-focused questions, you mentioned that around high school you figured out that you liked writing. I'm curious if you could explain that a little bit. Like, how did you figure out that writing was something that you enjoyed? Just to kind of like give you a prompt, the way for me was it happened kind of by accident. I never thought I would do writing ever. I just thought I was good at essays, like it was easy. And then I got into newspaper in high school and I was like, oh wait, I actually really like this journalism stuff. And it just kind of like happened by accident. So I'm curious, how did you figure out when you were in high school that like writing was something you really enjoyed?
It's pretty much the same exact dumb story. Yeah, I swear. I had 4 years of high school, 4 English teachers. I had 2 that were very nurturing. One who was very the second one, my sophomore high school teacher. I'm sorry, my sophomore English teacher was very I keep saying the word nurturing, but she was like she took a strong interest in my writing. She really wanted me to be kind of not proud, but just like and not even necessarily enthusiastic, but just to kind of have like the self-confidence, maybe like the self-esteem about my writing, to feel feel confident in what I was doing as examples of strong writing, because she thought that I was very capable, I guess. And that was always kind of like the genesis of it. I actually, my junior and senior year high school teachers, when I was in AP English and AP literature or whatever. You guys are probably like the same age as me, it seems like.
Zach is an infant, but I'm 31.
Okay. I'm 31. How old are
you? You're 31. I'm 31. Zach.
It's I'm 5.
26. I'm 5 for all intents and purposes, you know.
I was in the advanced placement classes, and so you're either familiar with those depending on where you live, or they have some kind of similar thing where you get like the college credit if you pass and you get a certain score on the test, and they always taught to the test. And both my junior and senior year teachers were very not nurturing. They were very critical of me because I wouldn't listen to their kind of like I wouldn't adhere to the formula that that you use to write an essay that passes the test. I wrote like a human being. You know, I constructed a narrative and I made it compelling, as opposed to being like, in the first paragraph I'm gonna write this.
Yeah.
In the second paragraph I'm gonna make this this argument. In the third paragraph I'm gonna further support it by saying this. And I didn't do that. And they both hated it, and they both told me that I wasn't gonna pass the test. And I got, this was on a 1 to 5 scale, but I got 5s on both of those tests. And I was just like, you guys, really shoved it. Not that they ever cared or maybe even learned about it, but like just like feeling more validated by the people who had faith in me. And I'm straying from the point is that in my junior year, I wanted to take psychology, and the class was too large. And so they started by kicking out all of the juniors and so the seniors could take it, because they wanted to have the seniors to have priority. And so I got kicked out of my class like first week of school, and I didn't have a class. And so my baseball coach, who was the journalism advisor, also was like, hey, come do journalism. And so this is funny. He's this is not funny. It's only funny if you think it's funny. He is
I'll be the judge.
Chad Moeller's brother. Do you know Chad Moeller? Yankees catcher.
Oh yeah.
He's just like always like second string catcher for the Yankees, probably for like 5 or 6 years. So Chad Moeller's brother was my baseball coach in high school, and also our journalism professor, journalism advisor, teacher, whatever. And so that's kind of where I learned that I was interested in journalism, although high school journalism is not real journalism, at least not at my school. So I thought the dicking around that we did in fifth period for 2 years was like journalism. I was like, yeah, this is awesome. I did like to write, and I kind of like, I don't think I was very good still, but like I, you know, just kind of, again, just practicing that and sharpening that tool was helpful. And I went to college wanting to be a journalism major, and I fucking hated it. I like genuinely hated it. And I did enough of the credits to still major in it, because it's like partly English classes too, but I ended up switching to economics, which really like probably was the right play from the start. But again, it's almost the same exact story, Ben. I mean, mostly fell into it. Otherwise I wouldn't have pursued it in college. I mean, I don't know what I would have majored in. I have no idea, but it wouldn't have been journalism.
Yeah. I definitely remember thinking that the journalism I was doing in high school was like Woodward Bernstein, like top notch. I'm going to expose this school, like, or that it was either that, or I was Andy Rooney, like writing my, you know what grinds my gears column.
100% that. Yeah.
It was one of the two.
A lot of those.
I didn't get into any to the school. The school newspaper class, whatever it was a super, super competitive thing where I was. So I ended up doing my senior year the TV show instead, which was 10 times more fun. I was the sports guy for the TV show, which I went to a thrift store.
You guys had a TV show?
It was like a weekly thing, you know? It's a media class type thing.
That's
for
cool.
Seniors who needed something to occupy their time so they didn't just leave school. And so I went to a thrift store and spent like $30 and got a bunch of like Craig Sager blazers straight from the 70s, and sat in these like awkward suits in front of a green screen and pretended to do my sports center thing. And it was actually great because it got me, our basketball team was ranked top five in the country. Jahlil Okafor was in my class. That's a name that sounds familiar to you.
Oh, wow. No, yeah, I know who Jahlil Okafor is.
Yeah, so we were very competitive in most things. And I got into, because I got like press credentials, I was able to get in like literally like media table level at all of these high school basketball events with tons of guys who are in the pros and stuff like that. And I'm just sitting there like with my little handheld recorder being like, getting some clips for the school TV show, you know?
Oh man.
And yeah.
That's
and
pretty then, cool.
Yeah. Less cool was when I decided to not take AP Lit and took AP Chem instead, chemistry, because I thought I was going to have to take Gen Chem in college. And wanted to get it out of the way, not thinking, not considering the fact that A, like, I was not going to get a 5 on that test no matter what happened. I left a half of that thing blank, you know.
Isn't that like one of the hardest ones?
Yes, thought, it was. I was a hard-headed 17-year-old.
Chemistry and the AP music theory AP tests were like the hardest.
And then it's like, and I did all that. I put myself through all of that. And then I went to a freaking like liberal arts school where I majored in literature and had never had to take a chemistry class in my life. You know? That was it. High school is great, isn't it? So you mentioned that you did play baseball in high school. And so just to dive a little bit further into baseball in general that we've already talked plenty of, you said you fell in love with it at an early age and you clearly played it to a fairly relatively high level. What is it about baseball specifically that you love? Why baseball is kind of the central question here. You know, what you could have been, as Ben likes to say, you could have done football or you could have done basketball. There's a lot of other sports stuff you could have done. Why baseball?
Mm-hmm. I think it's just my parents loved it. My mom wouldn't let me play football. I didn't really have any interest in playing by the time I was old enough to do it. Never also really was interested in basketball. I did play for 2 years. It was wildly mediocre. Did make one all-star team. Probably averaged like 2 points per game. It was pretty dope. But I think I was on the taller side. I think I was pretty committed to defense. I could grab a board or two. So that's where my value was. But no, I mean, baseball just from the very, very start, both my parents loved it. I think like the thing that I loved most, which is interesting, perhaps, you know, I don't know when kids really start to love it or what part about it they love most. Part of me feels like it's hitting, because that's where all the glory is. Maybe if you're weird, you like pitching when you're small, but growing up an Angels fan, I got to enjoy a lot of Jim Edmonds, and my favorite thing was a Jim Edmonds diving catch. And so my dad would take me to the yard, and instead of practicing throws, you know, practicing playing catch, I would practice diving for balls.
I did exactly this with my brother. My brother always wanted to do diving catches.
Yeah.
So he was, and I know he's listening. So Greg, I remember this. He's one of the few consistent listeners that we have. And we would go out in the front yard, we'd play catch, and he'd be like, all right, throw me some dives. So I'd throw him a fly ball that was way off, and he would go and dive for it and all that stuff. It's like the most fun.
Yeah. And, you know, you're a young kid and you just want to get dirty. But, you know, I ended up playing center field in high school. I mean, it all comes full circle. I got pushed to catcher in Little League because no one could or would play. So I was a catcher until I was 15. I want to say I was a pretty good catcher, although I don't really have anything to show for that. But when I was 15, the inverse happened when there was a kid who only played catcher, and I was like, what the fuck? So we didn't have any outfielders. I was like, okay. And I think the coaches saw me as capable, so they just pushed me to center field instead. And that's when I just became a center fielder, and I was quite good. I was fast. I took to it really quickly. I liked getting dirty, so I was always diving, covered a lot of ground. I was a varsity captain. I was gonna play D3 at Chapman University, which had literally just won the national champion in 2009. The year I graduated high school, they won the championship, so I was gonna be going to like the D3 championship school. But I had a bad senior year, and I was like feeling very kind of dejected about that, and being like, there's no path forward. Like, I'd just be doing this where I should be focusing on my education probably. So I didn't turn anything down. I just chose not to pursue it. But so that's my high school baseball story.
Yeah.
But also the thing that I have to say it, and my friend, if he ever listens to it, is gonna make fun of me because I always bring it up mostly as just like to be funny. But I went to high school with Freddie Freeman.
No.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Freddie's 2 years older than me, and so we played together. At least in the fall when we kind of were like doing inter squad stuff. But like our varsity coach at the time wouldn't have anyone lower than a junior be on varsity. So I was on the JV team when he was in his senior year. But yeah, I took grounders at third base with Freddie Freeman.
Oh wow.
So that's the pride of El Medina. So that's my one anecdote about Freddie, who 100% does not remember.
Where is he signed?
Wouldn't recognize
you
me.
You have the scoop, right? Like, is he going back to Atlanta? Said you have the scoop, right? Where's he signed?
Oh, I honestly think he could come back here. I do. I'm sorry. I say here. He's not coming to Hawaii. He could come to Hawaii. No, I think like just the way that the way that baseball is trending with owners being cheap asses. I just feel like it would be cooler if he stayed in Atlanta forever, until the end of his career. But I also think if he's going to go anywhere, I think he might just go home because he's got everything he needs at this point. I mean, he's going to be set up with a plush contract. He has a World Series ring. I could very easily see him coming back to Los Angeles or Los Angeles of Anaheim and being an Angel or a Dodger. That seems very plausible to me.
The great city of Los Angeles of Anaheim.
We know the Angels are like contractually obligated to have a first baseman under a 10-year contract at any given time.
Right. We need someone to fill that role. Like 10 million, like buy him out till he's 43.
Perfect.
26 million a year. I think that's perfect. That's perfect for us. It'll be just right when Trout's leaving. We won't re-up Ohtani. It will be just really a really spectacular transaction for all parties involved. Yeah, that sounds good.
Coming from a guy whose team gave a first baseman a extremely long contract in Chris Davis. Let me tell you, it's worth it. Worth it. Definitely worth it. It will not backfire.
How long was that one? Was that 7 years?
So it's a Bobby Bonilla contract because we're going to be paying him until about, for the next like 10 years. We will still be paying Chris Davis for the 2-3 years after Bryce Harper's contract ends.
Okay, that's fun.
So, he gets a lot of money for a very, very long time. It was a 15-year, $42 million contract.
1542?
That's what SportTrack is telling me.
That's not very much. They make it sound so bad every time I hear about that contract.
Because he literally had the worst season in the history of Major League Baseball.
Sure, right.
But
right.
we're paying him through 2037.
Okay, that's fun. Yeah.
2037, then, yep.
Assuming that the American Empire hasn't completely collapsed by 2037, I have to imagine whatever a dollar is worth then is going to be a lot less than a dollar now. So
yeah, I'm sure he's going to ask. Yeah. At some point, he's going to renegotiate and have it be all crypto or whatever.
Just paid all of Bitcoin.
Chipmunk or monkey NFTs or whatever.
2033 through 2037, he gets $1.4 million a year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
So like I said, worth it. Worth it. Definitely, definitely worth it. I want to ask, we always ask about ballparks. I want to know how many ballparks have you been to? Do you have a favorite? And when you go to the ballpark, do you have something like a food thing you always have to get? Or is there like a ballpark specific? So basically like, are you whenever I go, I got to get nachos kind of guy? Mm-hmm. Or is it like when I go to this specific ballpark, they've got this thing that is incredible and I always have to get that?
Yeah, I'm definitely not that sophisticated. My thing is I always wanted to get helmet ice cream because I wanted to get that little helmet.
Yeah, man.
I didn't even really care about the ice cream. I just want the little helmet.
Helmet Dippin' Dots.
A nice little collection of tiny helmets that in this day and age you can just go on eBay or something and get one. But when you go to a new park, I literally always see if they have helmet ice cream or some something akin to that.
Yeah.
I've been to Giants, Dodgers, Angels, Padres, Red Sox, Reds, Seattle. That honestly might be it.
That's a lot.
I guess so. I know that there are people who have been to many, many more.
I've
seven,
been to three,
seven.
So
okay, seven's okay. So seven's a lot. Seven's a lot. Let's say seven's a lot. But and four minor league parks. And my favorite park is the Hillsborough Hop Stadium in Oregon. Hillsborough being just outside of Portland. They are now the low A affiliate, I think, now, because they were rookie ball. They were the rookie affiliate. Now they're low A, I think, as of last year. And that field is nice. And it's AstroTurf. It's just like, it's really pretty new. So it's like just, it's in pristine shape. But being Oregon, they're like very foodie, beery people.
Sure.
So like the options there for food and beer are also spectacular. So it's a really good experience because it's, you know, it's like a tiny cozy park with a lot of good options. And it's the quality of play is whatever, but it's really at that point more for the experience. So that's definitely my favorite stadium that I've been to.
What if I told you there is a paradise on the south side of Chicago where you can get just about anything inside of a helmet that you want?
Is that the White Sox Stadium?
It is.
Guaranteed rate.
As we learned during the playoffs, they've got great helmet nachos.
Great helmet ice cream. Adam Wainwright had got a kick out of all of it. Come through.
I'm extremely interested. I mean, the White Sox have been my adopted team for forever. Frankly, because of Mark Burley and because of Frank Thomas, just forever, I've always been a White Sox fan. I have two White Sox hats. The Mark Burley through the legs play to Canerco is the best play of all time. Yes, I am, for all intents and purposes, a White Sox fan. Fuck the Angels.
That's awesome. I wish I had known that. Unfortunately, if we only have. Don't have too much time because I could talk about the White Sox for a million years, as Ben well knows. But
then I could do the Orioles too, so I empathize. It's okay.
That's fair. But so kind of following up on that question and some of the stuff we talked about earlier, what, if anything, would you say is the coolest thing you've ever seen live at a baseball game?
I haven't seen that cool of things. I haven't been there for any like spectacular milestone, but I did see Mike Trout rob a grand slam at Safeco. So like we drove up from Portland to Safeco, which is now not Safeco, right? It's something else.
It's T-Mobile
I think. Yeah.
First. I know.
You know what? It's Shoemaker, not guaranteed rate with a big red arrow pointing down. So,
nor is it American.
I don't know what's
field.
Worse or what's better. Matt Shoemaker, the home run machine, was pitching, and it was like third inning, bases loaded, one out, and like I'm possibly, you know, the only person who's not an Angels fan there in the left field pavilion, and it's just straight away dead center. And Trout goes up to rob it, and I lost it. Like I was like, oh! And the whole stadium just like fell to a hush. So I'm like screaming my lungs out. Trout caught that robbed this grand slam. I don't even think they scored. No, they did score. They 100% scored because it was one out, so he was tagging. But only one run instead of four. That was pretty amazing. But that's just like a day in the life of Mike Trout. You know?
Yeah.
The one thing, my favorite thing that ever happened to me was I caught an Eric Ibar foul ball with my bare hands. So that is 100% the coolest thing. That probably I would venture to say that 98% of the 40,000 people at that stadium thought that was the best thing they've seen in their life. That was probably one of their highlights of their lives, is watching
probably,
an Eric Ibar fly ball.
They probably still talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's somewhere out there. There's an old person who's just like, yeah,
that boy,
that boy. I wonder whether
never seen hands like them. That boy,
that 58 mile per hour flyner off of Eric Ibar's back.
Oh, it was a bullet. It was a really slow cannonball.
It was so slow. It was just, it was coming to me in slow motion. It was really incredible.
Which you kind of have to catch that. Then, like, if it's really slow,
if I didn't catch
it,
it would have hit my friend right in the face because she wasn't paying attention. I swear to God, it was like tailing right to her face, and I was just kind of like, boop.
So, really, also, you saved a life.
I saved a life.
I mean, that's
there would have been a lot of blood.
Yeah,
no doubt.
I think what we're getting at is you're a hero.
I am a hero.
We thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Look at the headline of this podcast.
Alex Chamberlain
is a hero. He's a
national hero. Yeah.
He is a goddamned hero. All right, one last baseball question I want to get to before we talk about some random stuff. All right. Now, obviously, lockout is going on, and we all want that to go away. But with putting that out of our minds, if you're made commissioner of baseball tomorrow, what is something that you are changing about the game of about not the game necessarily game of baseball, maybe the game itself, but just about Major League Baseball or the game of baseball that is not lockout related? Obviously, we'd all like just end the lockout. But
well, do I answer like sincerely, or do I answer this question like a jackass?
However you would like to answer.
If I answer like a jackass, I probably just say that, you know, I'm just a puppet for the owners. So if you put me in charge, I'm just going to – the thing I'd change is probably to make the game worse. I'd probably
– It's a very strikingly honest answer, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I probably – like, I probably wouldn't care very much. I'd probably getting paid like – like what I'm getting paid 7 or 8 figures to just kind of
be
but if I had any power,
$11 million, you first kidding me?
Yeah he just does this you know, he just does what he's doing.
Oh my god,
it's like the most plush job. I mean, because they appoint him to that job, right? The owners vote to pick a commissioner, so this guy, this asshole, is just he's just selected to make $11 million for basically no reason. I mean, he's not doing anything of substance. Yeah. Even if the owners had good intentions, he's not doing anything of value at this point. He's just a figurehead. He's just there. Yep. So anyway, if I wasn't just a figurehead, and if I did care about baseball, which I presumably I do, and I did have some power, I think I would. Wow, a lot of talk, big talk for this guy who doesn't know how to answer this question. I don't have a lot of complaints about baseball. I don't care about pace of play. I guess like universal DH is the obvious one, and I would do that solely because I don't like pitchers getting hurt. But I also have like that masochistic like kind of pleasure in watching pitchers suck really badly at hitting, and then also when they do get a hit, that's kind of fun too. So there's like there is a little bit of pleasure to be derived from that, you know. Like I think we're way too strongly anti pitcher hitting, but on all seriousness, from a health standpoint, you gotta stop hitting pitchers. Mm-hmm. What would I change? God, I don't know. I don't know if I'd change anything, guys. Because I don't really have any problems with anything.
Baseball's great.
Honestly, I don't.
Baseball's great.
What would you guys change? Maybe I need some ideas. Maybe I just need that. Maybe I'm just
not very creative.
So
I will say the most common answer that we get is improve pay for minor leaguers.
Oh! See now, I'm thinking too inside the box. I'm thinking about what's happening on the field.
I think that's totally understandable.
Yeah.
So we do get some about. We've gotten. I think Sean Anderson, our last guest, said robot umps. He would institute robot umps, and also the big thing, he wanted a pitch clock, which was an interesting discussion, and something that I kind of came around on. At first, I kind of recoiled at the thought of a pitch clock, but the more he explained it, the more I was like, okay, Yeah, I could get behind that.
Which, though, Alex, if Mark Burley is one of your favorite players of all time, maybe you actually could get behind that more than we might anticipate. Because I think I actually brought this up to Sean, where it's like, I'm pretty iffy on the robot umps because I'm one of those I enjoy the human element type people, you know. A pitch clock, I kind of had the same reaction at first. I got behind it because I stopped to think about it and I was like, far be it from me to dictate what a major league pitcher should do, you know, but I can say pretty confidently, you don't need 25, 30 seconds in between each pitch. You just don't. One of the joyous things about watching Mark Burley pitch was that beyond the pitch to contact, it was just catch throw. Yeah. The perfect game was over in an hour and 26 minutes and the White Sox scored 5 runs, you know?
Beautiful.
And I thought, and it, you know, especially as someone, you know, the pace of play itself, like broadly speaking, doesn't matter to me. But when a pitcher can get you in and out of there in 2 hours, I think it's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah. I agree that like at a certain point, you're not really risking injury. I know that maybe is maybe the most compelling argument, but speeding someone up from like 35 seconds to 25 seconds is not going to cost them a UCL, you know. Their ligaments are going to be fine. I have my idea. Yeah. And pay for minor leaguers is great, whatever, you know. Pay them.
I got you.
Don't pay them. I don't care. No, I'm kidding. I mandate
Alex Chamberlain does not want to pay minor leaguers.
quote
Alex, they should pay for they should play for free.
God. They play for exposure. I would mandate bullpen carts.
Oh.
And they have to be decorated.
And goofy. Oh, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Like how they mandatory come out with like a joke backpack, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, mandatory bullpen cart. If you turn down a bullpen cart, no turning it down. I think there's something fun about walking out to a song to the mound.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of dreams about that, frankly. Like I don't want to be a pitcher, although the best way to the major leagues is to be a mediocre reliever. If I got the call and I was the closer and I was walking out to the mound, I've thought so many times about what my song would be, because you don't get 10 seconds at the batter's box. You know, you get like two good minutes to like walk out and warm up. Right. So I was like, damn, like there's so many good options. So I think doing a mandatory bullpen cart would undercut that a little bit, you know, like it would take away from my opportunity to really play out like a very unpleasant song, which is mostly what my dream is about. Instead of like have a really unpleasant song playing that the crowd hates. Like that's kind of like Grant Balfour always had the like the Metallica, and he had those guys with like the headbanging. Yeah. And I very much listen to hardcore and things that are maybe as heavy or heavier than Metallica. So I feel like there would be a small group of people who enjoy it, and then mostly everyone is very turned off by it. But again, if I had the cart, I would lose a lot of that time. So it's a price I'm willing to pay to be able to ride in a cart while listening to that song.
Closers don't get the cart, I think, is the compromise here. If you're like coming out, if you're a schmuck coming out in the sixth or seventh inning, you know what you get.
Actually, that's really good. I like the cart in the sixth inning.
If you're a closer, if you're the closer, you get your song, you get the, if they do this. I know they do this at several other stadiums other than Sox Park, but they do the thing where they strobe the LED lights and everything's flashing. And then you get to walk out and take your sweet time and you walk out to
a song that everyone like. You're walking out to like a Frank Zappa deep cut that's just like a whole bunch of strange freeform guitar, and the whole stadium's like, "What is this?" That would be perfect. I love the idea of actually coming out to a terrible song. That's hilarious. I would. That sounds like some. That's a guy I would love to see. Is just like every year he picks a new song that's just horrible.
Awful. Yeah.
No mass appeal whatsoever.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, you're so good. And you're so good that you don't care. If you're threatened to not play, like if someone up higher up was like, no, you can't do that, and I'd be like, all right, fine, I'm out. And I just walk. Yeah, you know, like I've already made like I'm good enough, I've made like a few mil. I'm set for the next, you know, several years. If you don't let me walk out to this really bad song, I'm out. You know, go find yourself a new closer.
Yeah.
If Liam Hendricks wanted to come out to like Lana Del Rey or something like that, would anyone like would anyone be like, maybe reconsider?
I would think twice.
Do your thing.
Exactly.
So,
I would like to move on to the sort of more
move on at the 53rd minute of the podcast. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. We just started. We're a quarter of the way through,
baby.
Now, so I want to get to the final little section that's just more random stuff. So we're gonna go a few things here, and then the final section of the final section is the full count. So we're gonna ask you about the order of operations trifecta. We are going to ask you three things.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's good. PEMDAS. Always remember that comes up frequently in my everyday life.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are going to ask you three things, and we want to know the order in which you do each of those things. So, the first thing, when you get dressed, socks or pants first? What goes on first?
Well, specifically, I guess if I'm wearing pants, I'll put my socks on. Wow. I'm really thinking about this. Do I put pants on first? What the fuck?
It can be totally like outfit dependent too. That's how it is.
Something I've
we've had.
Yeah. I think when I wear shorts, I put my shorts on first. And if I'm wearing pants, I'll put the socks on first. So I don't have to pull my pants up at all.
Yep.
It's like a very lazy thing, but I do not want to have to touch my pants again. So I don't pull them
up. I've gone through the effort of putting them on once.
I don't
want
to have to touch them a second time. They just let them hang there as they're supposed to. I think I have a different order for each kind of – I think I have – shorts first and then socks and the other
way
around.
So that's common. I mean, that's a pretty common answer to that. It's outfit dependent.
Especially if
you are not outside the norm.
Shorts come out more than others. All right, so part number two of the order of operations trifecta: if you eat cereal and you also drink milk, and if you have the two together, as most typically do, which comes first?
Well, I don't eat cereal, but absolutely the cereal goes first before the milk.
All right, new supercut. Get it lined up.
I know.
It's just like, well, how do you know how much cereal to put in? And how much milk to put in. So if there's no cereal in there, you pour the milk in, and then you just start pouring cereal. And how do you know if you've put too much milk, too little cereal? Yep. The liquid has to go in after the solid because the liquid fills in all the gaps. Like it's just science.
It is science. Yes, take that, Jake Seeley.
It's just general chemistry.
How many? Like this has been. We have now been doing this show for a year.
It's like 28.
How many hours of content have we dedicated to telling Jake Seeley he's wrong?
Oh, well, everyone has to dedicate a lot of time to telling Jake Seeley he's wrong about a lot of things. So
the supercut I did for we did a clip show a couple weeks ago, and I did a supercut of like the first 27 people, 25 of which said, "Oh yeah, cereal. What kind of psychos are doing milk?" You know, and I guess that was enough. So Ben, you want to take away number three?
Yes, let's do the last one. And I always feel bad that we like rag on Jake, and I always feel obligated to say I love Jake, and he's
doing
wonderful,
fine.
Wonderful human.
He takes it in stride.
Yes, he is a delightful person. Anyways, the last one. When you brush your teeth, water or toothpaste first?
What if I say I don't use water?
Are you about to tell me you raw dog it when you brush your teeth?
I raw dog it. You got to keep the bristles hard and stiff so they brush your teeth more vigorously.
I'm just dying at the way you said that.
Hard
it was
and
so
stiff.
Aggressive.
It should be noted that we're technically not allowed to curse, I don't think. So when I edit it,
I've said a lot of
no, 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 no. We all curse. That's the I use a
okay.
I paste a Hawk Harrelson mercy call over.
Oh, mercy. Okay. I like
every
that.
Bleep we get, so it's just that's just going to be
I
a
just, I just
that's
love
just going to be a mercy
it was just so
like it, right. I bleep
it wasn't
bleep,
it wasn't just. It wasn't just this is how I do it. It was like you're goddamn right. That's how I do it.
Yeah. Well, why? I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't understand why you need the water. I mean, it's
to
not like the toothpaste. It's fine. The bristles are fine. You got teeth. Your teeth made of marshmallow. Come on. Tough
you
enough.
You gotta seal the toothpaste onto the toothbrush, man.
You don't need to seal it anywhere. Just put the toothpaste on the brush and then put it straight in your mouth. You're not waving it around. You don't need to like make sure it doesn't fall off.
This is a Fangraphs thing right here, because you know who the other person who told us this was? The other of the 30 guests we've had, the only other person who told us this was Justin Choi. So
yep.
Oh wow.
Yep. Something in the water over there. Or not.
Yeah, I've never had any once felt compelled to put water on my toothbrush. And I do it with my daughter. You know, I teach her the right way. I know that society looks down on me. but I don't care. Because I've never had a cavity. You know what? I've never had a cavity. And I don't put water on my toothbrush.
Maybe you're doing it right.
So you tell me. You tell me. I brush my teeth with hard bristles.
Look at the results.
My teeth are made of rocks, and they are fine.
Hey, the bad process, good results. It happens, right?
That's right.
Bad process. Yeah, it's true. It's true. You can get bad process, good results. It's true.
All right. I want to ask one of my favorite questions. And I want to preface this by saying it's okay if the answer is no. But have you ever seen a ghost or experienced something that you could not explain?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I just know that when I was small, probably like 4, 5, or 6, I had one time seen, I was still awake. All the lights were off and my mom or dad had like poked around, just like around the doorway just to check on me to see if I was asleep. And I happened to look up and see the head and just, it was dark. So it was just like a silhouette. And that actually scared me for a long, long time. Like,
yeah, I bet. Lie awake, you just saw a disembodied head.
Right. I'd lie awake waiting to watch, to see the head like appear in my doorway. And the thing is, I was old enough to understand that it was probably my parents. And yet it still scared me to think that someone had looked at me and this, just the silhouette of a head past my door frame. Yeah. So that actually scared me for a long time, but I knew at the time that it wasn't a ghost. I don't think I've ever had any supernatural-esque experiences before or since. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's valid.
It's all good. We get that plenty.
More on scary parent. Stuff. Scary parent.
No,
looks.
No.
no supernatural stuff.
No supernatural funny
business.
Stuff,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if it happened to everyone, it wouldn't be very supernatural. You know,
right. So. It would be like everyone.
It would be very pedestrian natural.
I've heard.
It would be worth asking a question about on this very important podcast.
What was it? We mentioned it. Oh, yeah. It was Ellen Adair who said that, like, if you are open to seeing ghosts, the ghosts will find you, basically. Like if you're kind of like, I want to see ghosts, then you're probably going to find them.
Very, very closed off to ghosts.
I don't blame you.
There are good reasons for that. There's no judgment on this.
There's a whole lot of literature written about why you should not be open to ghosts. There's a lot.
But I want to ask you one more thing before we get on to the full count, our last thing. If you could take this question interpret this in any way you want. If you could sit down and have a conversation with anybody at all in human history, person, generic person, you know, whatever, who would it be? Sometimes the first thing that comes to the top of your head is the best answer.
Yeah,
no pressure.
Even if it feels stupid, the first thing that pops in your head.
Yeah, it feels like it should be profound. And now,
no, it does not have to be profound.
My daughter just escaped out the back door. It's happening right now. Right when I'm about to give a really heavy answer would be actually my mom, who passed away in 2014. That was the first thought I had. So, I would, you know, if I could sit down and talk to her again, that would be nice.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Woo, heavy.
You're not the first person who's given an answer like that. Okay.
Not at all. Not at all, actually. That's pretty we've gotten a few of those types of answers.
Yeah, yeah. But that was my first instinct. But I feel like this is a question that I've had an answer to before. And it's not a baseball person either. I want to say that it's like probably like an author or an entertainer of some kind. Someone who a creative, like just to pick their mind, to pick their brain about process, you know, like I think as someone who writes, as someone who likes to write, as someone who's very much not really creative, really much more journalistic.
Yeah.
Talking to some journalists, you know, I really excel more in reporting what has happened, or prognosticating, but not really kind of manifesting something from my own imagination to kind of talk to someone who is very good at that. And it's a very, like, you know, there's all sorts of people on the internet or in books who can tell you what their process is. And that's not very interesting to me. I want to just talk to someone over coffee.
Yeah.
You know, and just pick their brain about process. Right now I'm listening to the It's Always Sunny podcast. I don't know if you guys are fans of It's Always Sunny.
I like the show. I'm not a diehard fan, but I've watched a lot of it.
The podcast is very funny. I've listened to a couple of different podcasts where they are doing these rewatch stuff. And theirs is interesting because they write and act. So they see both sides of the camera. So for anyone who's not even like necessarily interested in podcasts or the show, it's more interesting than other shows or podcasts, like that, where they are doing this rewatch bullshit.
Because
you get to, you kind of get the process, but they also just spend so much time doing what we're doing, which is bullshit. Just shooting the shit with each other. And kind of like, you kind of see just organically what they do in the writing room. Just by virtue of talking to each other on a podcast. So it's been fun to listen to that. And that's the kind of, like, I feel like that's the kind of conversation I'd want to have with someone
over a
cup of tea.
I get that. Know? Yeah, for sure. That's cool. No, that's a great answer.
Yeah. I like that.
I just don't know who. I don't know who.
Yeah. No, that's fine. I think that's a great answer. So we're going to go ahead and move to the final section of this. This is the full count, in which we are going to ask you for a recommendation in each of five categories, 3 and 2, full count. So I always preface this by saying it does not have to be some obscure recommendation or anything profound. Mm-hmm. Usually the first thing that pops in your head, that's what I want to hear. So with that in mind, the first category is books. What is a book that you would recommend?
Do I know how to read?
I guess that's, I probably should have started with that. Are you familiar with the written word?
Yeah. ooh, wow, that's tough. I actually just read
the American literacy rate is going down, they say.
Well, you know what? So I actually don't read a lot of books. It's the point where I read so few of them that I actually write them down. Which book did I like recently that I would recommend? You're gonna have to bear with me here. There's not very many for me to read. I really enjoyed short stories from Raphael Bob Waksberg, who's the BoJack Horseman.
Yep.
His short story collection, Someone Who Will Love You and All Your Damaged Glory, was really, really good. Really good.
Ooh.
So there's other books that I'd recommend, but that one I remember enjoying very much. And as someone, if you enjoy BoJack, you'll definitely enjoy it. But even if you don't, very strong voice and very, very clever person. You can just really get that through the writing. I really enjoyed that one. That came out in 2019, I think.
Nice. That's great.
That one. Recommendation number two that we are asking for is food. And that can be like a restaurant, a recipe, an ingredient, an item, like anything vaguely culinary.
Wow. Wow. I'm quite passionate about food. So I don't really even know where to begin. I will say that my favorite ethnicity. You know, I like Japanese food. Japanese food is my favorite. I will eat literally anything. I love Japanese food. It's so simple. It tends to be very healthy. I mean, all foods can be good or bad in their own right, but just the simplicity and straightforwardness of of Japanese food and recipes, and really the diversity of everything within that umbrella cuisine is really, really wonderful. And there are too many things for me to recommend. I could not recommend just one thing.
Yeah.
But just my comfort food growing up was always
Japanese food as a whole. It's great. Yeah. All right. Next category, movies and or TV. What is a movie and or a TV show that you would recommend?
Movie I think would be for probably Forgetting Sarah Marshall is what great, always comes to mind for great some reason. Movie. Yeah, yeah. Fantastic. Or MacGruber. MacGruber. One
oh,
of those
dude.
Two.
MacGruber. Yeah. Are you yeah, watching MacGruber. The show? I haven't watched
it. I haven't watched the show yet. I haven't watched the show.
They made a show Peacock. Very recently, it's on Peacock. Too, like yeah.
A full 12, full 11 years yeah. later. You guys have seen it, right? You guys have seen the movie?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
So, I've never seen the movie, but like I've seen, okay. I know all the skits, but I've never
okay.
seen it.
I won't spoil it, but like the way that the show starts, okay. from my understanding and reading the premise, is very funny if you've seen the movie, and I'm like already excited to watch it, and yet I haven't because I don't have Peacock, because what the fuck is Peacock? yeah. And a TV show, I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't watch a lot of TV, but I really enjoyed what was it that I watched recently? Oh, I'm a Bob's Burgers fan. I'm a Bob's Burgers fan, but I could talk ad nauseum about when Bob's Burgers went south. So if I had to recommend like a season range, it'd be 1 through 5. If you're going to start watching Bob's Burgers, you start from 1, you go through 5, you stop forever. Hmm. Don't watch the next 6 or 7 seasons.
Oh, wow. That's one of those
very
shows
strong
that,
opinion
like,
of mine.
That's one of those shows I know if I started it, I would love it. I just haven't gotten around to watching it.
It's really spectacular at the beginning.
I'll watch anything H. Sean Benjamin's in, honestly.
He's the best.
Love that guy.
But they make him not funny in the later seasons. Like really? they have managed to make H. Sean Benjamin not funny, and that's very hard to do.
That's extremely
so
hard to
I would,
do.
You really start to notice it at like season 6 or 7.
Oh wow.
But again, I could talk about this forever because I've seen every episode like 24 times. So
oh man, it's been a show that's been on my like to watch in the nebulous background of my brain for quite some time. So
watch it,
take stock of that for sure. Sticking with pop culture, what is a music recommendation that you can give to us?
My favorite band of all time might be the Wonder Years. Are you guys familiar with the Wonder Years? Pop punk out of Philadelphia. Familiar. They're very good. Every Time I Die was a hardcore band. They just broke up. They're from Buffalo. I would recommend either of those two things. If I had a walkout song, it would be an Every Time I Die song. Just truly like pulverizing, just absolutely bone crushing riffs sometimes. Very much a mathcore band. And very nice. I would call them cerebral. But they were around for like 23 years and they just broke up recently, which is very sad. That's my recommendation. So now we can come full circles because you can go listen to Every Time I Die. You can be like, wow, that really sucks. I really do not enjoy listening to this. And then think about you, it's the 9th inning, your team's holding like a 1-0 lead. And I'm walking out to Every Time I Die. Yeah, and everyone's just like, oh, wow.
Just kill the
tension. When is this over? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what, actually, I kind of want us to lose now.
When I was in college, we had my last 3 years, I was a pitcher at Bard College. Did not win very many games, I'll say that much. But we had a closer. When we did win games, we had a closer who used oh man, it was a Motorhead song, and I can't remember what it was.
I assume it wasn't Ace of Spades.
It was not Ace of Spades. No, it was whatever.
The chase is better than the catch. Overkill. I don't know.
It was wrestling intro song. It's whatever. But it was, he was like a real tall, kind of gangly kid who would wear his socks high, and he had rec specs too. So. It would
I had
be
rec specs.
Incredible watching whenever he would come in to close a game at home, and he would have this, this heavy ass Motorhead song playing, jogging in from the bullpen and looking at the kids in the dugout on the other team, just kind of being like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah. Like Chris Sabo.
Definitely a psych out. Definitely a psych out. Oh, yeah. It worked.
All right. The final category, miscellaneous. Anything from your life Oh no, you're all good. Anything from your life that you would recommend? Miscellaneous. This can be an activity. This can be a place, a person, a thing. This can be
A place. That's a good idea.
Literally anything. It can be a practice that you do every day. It can be a gadget that you own. Literally the first thing that pops into your head. What would you recommend?
Well, let's do a place. Yep. No, let's not do a place. No, let's do a place. I went to Europe in 2018, and we hit all the major kind of spots, you know, kind of like the trendy, like we went to Venice, we went to Paris, but we also stopped in Slovenia, and there's this town called Lake Bled. And it is like possibly the most beautiful place I've ever been. A lot of good hiking, a lot of beautiful scenery, a lot of like gorges and hiking. And I said hiking twice. I don't really give a shit. The lake is amazing. There's a church on an island in the middle of the lake that you can like ride a gondola out to. You can row your own gondola out there, whatever. And it's just like no one talks about Slovenia, no one goes there, so it's not really people's radar. So when we went there, it was just very tame. Like it was not very touristy or crowded the way that like these other places were, and it was profoundly more enjoyable than anywhere else I've been possibly in my life. So if you do have the great fortune to be able to travel safely and stop by Slovenia, which is just outside of Italy, if I'm not mistaken, very close by.
Right, go to Lake Bled.
Very, very incredible place.
That's great. Visit Bless Slovenia. Up. Visit.
I don't know.
Slovenia.
It's the Slovenia.
Great.
Slovenia.
Great.
I don't know. Slow.
Oh,
slow
I don't know. I don't know how is it pronounced.
I don't
Slovenia?
Know. I don't know.
I don't know. I always said Slovenia, but
Slovenia.
You know, the Balkans are super cool. The Balkans have a ton of history and a ton of really cool, beautiful scenery, but for
they really do
numerous political, military, humanitarian reasons, it has not been a particularly feasible tourist destination for much of
that. Is true. That is true.
A century or so. That's a good one, though. I would love to go there.
A way to
that's
say
great.
It, yes.
Well, anyways, Alex, thank you so much for joining us here on Shag and Flies. It has been a joy to have you. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, man. Thank you so much for being here. This is awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Sorry for making us wait. Possibly, Zach asked me, I think, 4 months ago. So this has been a
don't worry about it.
A long it's time right. coming.
I'm just shooting arrows off into the
Well, I strung you along. Let's hear